hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America. No, no, no.
Okay, hello, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Bot Damn America. I'm Jake, and that's Anders.
Anders J. Lee here.
And I'm also here, Naomi Caravani.
You gotta let the host introduce you, babe.
Fuck.
You don't just bust into a podcast and announce yourself. And I'm here too.
It's like in at stand-up open mics, which me, Jake, and Naomi have done several. The host has to announce every comedian, even though they know where they're going. They'll like read out the list of names and then one by one announce each person, and a new comedian will like go up to the stage thinking that they can just waltz on there because the person before them went, they kept track of that. But no, it's always a learning experience. This is one of the rules in comedy that you have to be brought up to the stage.
Are rules. There is decorum. You shake the host's hand for some reason every time.
Yeah. That's how COVID was spread too.
Yeah.
comedy open mics were
super spreader events.
Yeah.
Welcome to the super spreader bucket event.
Yeah.
Pine Box Rock Shop. Well, Anders, do you want to introduce our guests, or are we just going to hang out in limbo here for a while?
Also, I'm not even here, basically, yet. I'm waiting to be introduced. I can't.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Naomi threw a wrench in this whole thing. Our guests from the Cargo Cult podcast returning to the show, Naomi Caravani.
Hello.
And Michelle Greenstein.
Good afternoon.
Okay, now we can speak whenever we want to. Right?
Now you are allowed to speak.
It's been done. It's been established. There was a radio show in the aughts I used to listen to as a kid that would do no introductions of the hosts. Uh-huh. It was like as a choice. And it was I kind of respected it, but it was also kind of annoying because you didn't know who was who. And
it's
but
like
at the same time,
know who we are.
Yeah. Well, but they were like, we want it to be super intimate, so we're not even going to say our names. We're not going to do any introductions whatsoever. And in a way, you kind of don't need to do that because like it takes a long time if you're listening to a show to like remember who the people are, you know. Mm-hmm. So they just like That's let's true. It doesn't matter. And then then eventually you'll forget them anyway. So
right.
You know, keep it on the content, I guess.
I always feel weird when I listen to a podcast and they don't introduce people, and you're just like, am I supposed to be here?
Eavesdropping.
Also, like, if I don't know who the hosts are, like, how am I supposed to know what to think? Like, I'm supposed to form my own opinions based on the content of what they're actually saying.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I need to look them up and see if I agree with their political views before I can judge if they're making good points or not. Come on.
Yeah. Jake has CIA connections, so.
Do you really, Jake?
CIA connections?
No.
Like the culinary
allegedly
America or something.
Yeah, it's this whole Pod Damn America thing is an op.
We are pro drunk driving now, so that's maybe something you would have wanted to know.
Yeah. Jake's move to LA precipitated this decision, I'm guessing.
And that is a CIA op. I'm the deep state to get people more drunk on the road.
We were all Russian ops for a time, Naomi, Michelle, and I.
That's right. Yeah, I guess we have to disclose that.
Yeah, it is important for people to know.
I'm Russian on the highway with a bottle of Jameson in my cup holder.
Make that Stolies.
Oh, yeah.
And a Russian ballet teacher. So I can like count. I can say dance moves. So watch out.
So that's when the kompromat began, when you were a young dance student?
Yeah.
Okay. I had a neighbor who, my friend growing up was Russian, and he had like a really old grandma who lived with him. And I only found out recently she was like a dyed-in-the-wool communist and would like paint portraits of like Lenin and stuff. But they kept that away from the kids.
Yeah. Mm. Oh yeah. He also gave money. Your friend gave money to Navalny. I remember that. He must be pretty sad now.
Yeah. R.I.P. I should send him a text.
R.I.P. Navalny. Yeah. I think, well, Navalny, they were like, Alexei, you come back to Russia, we're going to kill you. And he was like hanging out in Germany for a while. And he was, people were still like donating money to him. And he's like, well, I guess I got to do something and go back to Russia. And that's when he was imprisoned again.
Damn.
And died.
Was it natural causes?
He was poisoned also, so I'm guessing Russian causes.
Yeah, you got to do the Napoleon thing and build up an immunity to poison so that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's the thing Napoleon did?
Yeah. By the end, he was like blue because he was...
The Bride guy does.
He was
the what guy?
The Princess Bride guy? I don't know his name.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember anything.
But I was thinking
in the movie.
I was thinking Rasputin. He kind of did that, but he used like magic, dark occult magic to eat poison cupcakes.
That definitely seems like a Rasputin thing.
Kind of his main thing.
Yeah.
And the big old dick.
Anyway, happy Women's History Month, everyone. It's Podcast America. What the fuck are we talking today about? What the fuck are we talking about today with Cargo Cult, a tech podcast? What are we talking today?
Did you guys see that Neuralink released a video of their first patient playing chess?
No. I did not see that. Chip?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, it's funny that like chess is a thing. They're like, look how smart, like we could do smart things with this. Like, you know, chess.
Speaking of Russia.
Oh, is Russia into chess?
Yeah. That's why at the office are all those chess boards.
We're calling it the King's Gambit.
Was this a real video?
Yes, it was a real video. It does look like he was actually, controlling the mount of the chessboard with his, or the chess pieces, the pawns, with his brain chip. But again, this is not new technology. This is at least 20-year-old technology to be able to move a cursor with a brain chip. The motor cortex was isolated like nearly for 100 years. You could pass electrodes through your brain and be able to control movement.
So it's kind of on par with what's been happening already and what happened in 2017, which is when the first human patient controlled a computer just by thinking. What's interesting,
this is the first scientific study that's like publishing its finding as reels instead of papers.
and retweets of videos. Yeah.
The worst X-Men power, you know, you're in like the chair, the floating chair that Professor X has, and you're like, behold, I can move a cursor. Very cool.
So there's nothing written up about this. It's just like a video. They don't have like the study written down by a scientist like they're supposed to do.
Well, it's a private company. It's not a university doing the research. We're not getting any like statements from the scientists either. It's just like Musk and the company tweeting things out like one day this telepathic machine will be able to, I don't know, communicate. Yeah, one of his dreams is like, imagine if Stephen Hawking could have talked faster. I can just imagine Musk like watching video, or maybe he met Stephen Hawking at one point and was like, oh my God, spit it out. Damn it.
this guy, he won't get to the point, but of course, like, with the recent revelations that Stephen Hawking like has a connection to Epstein, it's like, it's probably maybe a good thing he couldn't like really he couldn't talk that quickly and get his ideas out, because he would have like seduced a child faster or something like that. but
he could have gotten to more of them if he was talking faster.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, like, the funny thing about Neuralink, though, is that the company has, like, very explicit aims that go beyond, like, helping paralyzed people and helping people, like Stephen Hawking, like, communicate faster. Like, Elon Musk, I'm sure you guys have heard, has, you know, talked in many different interviews at length, like, you know, for years about how he wants to, quote unquote, merge human beings in AI. And his reason for this is, of course, because if we don't, then we're going to hit the singularity and AI is going to take over, you know, artificial intelligence is going to surpass human intelligence and it's going to leave us humans in the dust. And so that's why we need Neuralink to, quote unquote, solve this problem, right? That's what he says. And so it's just, I mean, beyond it being not actually inevitable by any sort of scientific standards, what's happening is, like, we're getting the ushering in of all these, like, really transformative transhumanist technologies. But it's all, like, justified by a way of saying, like, well, if we don't do this, then, like, you know, it's almost like a rapture sort of situation that these, like, technologists have introduced into the popular culture. Like, you can really parallel the singularity with the, like, Judeo-Christian ideas of the rapture, where, like, oh, it's this hypothetical point in the future where, like, the world's going to end unless we do transcendence. And transcendence, in this case, is, like, merging man and machine.
Wow. So he's trying to get ahead of the singularity by building more computer brains?
Yeah.
He's trying to make sure the singularity is good by having neurons merge human beings in AI. Because if not, AI will outpace us, right? And so, like, I mean, besides the obvious contradiction that it's like, oh, we need to do this thing so that this bad thing doesn't happen, it's also just, like, you know, incomparable with how you'd think, like, we should be, like, allocating money, you know, as a society, when they're like, there's so many, like, real issues that are, like, affecting humans' lives. But instead, for people like Musk, it's all about, like, future ideas and, like, nebulous ideas, and, like, progress
and, like, and
transformation.
Yeah. And there are just other brain chip companies who have already been doing this. They're way ahead of Musk. The distinguishing thing with this brain chip is that it is more invasive, so it's, like, supposed to connect with more neurons in the brain, and that's what makes it more dangerous. So really, they're just, like, now playing with these human subjects, that, and it could be fatal, as we've heard with the monkeys. They killed a lot of monkeys.
Are they still killing monkeys? That's
no,
my concern.
They moved on this is the first human trial, so they did the animal trials.
Oh, God.
Right? But now they moved on to the first human trial, which is what we're seeing the video of now. It's called the Prime Study.
Okay. And who is this person? Do we know anything about them who signed up for this, ostensibly?
He looks like a hippie. Well, he's quadriplegic, and he's wearing, like, one of those hemp sweaters. Nolan. Oh, yeah, it was funny. He, like, they were like, this is the first tweet sent by Neuralink. Now they're making this guy a star.
Yeah. He's a 29-year-old kid.
Nolan Arbaugh.
So, like, a transhumanist, like, hippie kind of weird tech guy. That's the type of guy. I can see that.
Yeah. I don't know what his, I wonder what his digital footprint is like pre-Neuralink. Like, you know, what his political views are. I would be interested.
All right. Yeah.
This is the first tweet sent by Neuralink, and it's about how the Earth is flat.
I've merged with AI, and AI told me that it's all a lie.
I mean, he's really buying into a Neuralink.
Have to sign up for this, of course.
His first tweet was, Twitter banned me because they thought I was a bot. X on, and Elon Musk reinstated me because I am.
Oh,
damn.
Let's make fun of this quadriplegic guy.
I mean, but that's the thing. Like, it's not really about him. Like, you know, sure. Neuralink, like the applications of this kind of technology, which is called a brain computer interface, like Neuralink, that are advertised by its proponents, are all about, like, you know, helping the sick, right? And enhance the cognitive abilities of people who need it, right? But we know, not only from statements by Elon Musk, but we also know from, you know, statements by other, like, transhumanists, and also by from, like, DARPA papers, because DARPA really led the way in terms of all the research and funding for the BCI in its early days, going all the way back to the 1970s. But we know that this is not just about helping people who are paralyzed, right? They want to transcend humanity and create something that's, like, quote unquote post-human, right? So there's this one, like, military paper that talked about using this kind of technology in what they call, like, wind scenarios, which, oh my God, let me see if I can get this. It's warfare.
Wind? W-I-N-D?
Like war. It's conflict areas.
Yeah. So, like, you know, to enhance our own capabilities as, like, perhaps an army, or in some way to influence the opponent's capabilities, right? And so there's all these military applications of this kind of technology that I think academics are starting to realize, which is why you have a lot of scientists and academics kind of, like, sounding alarm bells about this. And some groups are saying, you know, we need international law, but also on the other hand, like, international law has, like never done anything, and the US just blatantly ignores international law all the time. But I think what the scientists are, you know, bringing up is the very real concern that there are potentially really negative applications of this kind of technology, right, of merging man with machine, where, you know.
So what's riskier, that pursuing this or pursuing AI? Because there was an article I read recently saying that there is, like, a not significant chance, but a not insignificant chance either, that AI will perhaps kill humans. Like, it'll just... Yeah,
just by accident?
No, it'll just decide logically that that what's the point of keeping these people alive in this hospital or whatever, or, you know, launch nukes or whatever the fuck. Like, we're slowly but surely giving it too much power, and then that's gonna turn catastrophic.
I don't know if we're delegating much to AI right now. AI systems in military, it's like, in military applications, it's like just kind of helping combat soldiers, like, work through a problem with a chatbot. It's not, there's no real delegation to AI yet, and I don't think there will be, especially with nuclear weapons.
I think what's also important to remember is that figures like Musk widely advertised their fear of, like, deep artificial intelligence. And this is what manufactures consent for all of these companies and, you know, task forces in the government to, like, make sure that AI is implemented correctly, right? And what does correctly mean for people like this, right? It's not necessarily what you and I would think correctly is. And the other thing that I think is important about this is you have people like Eric Schmidt and Henry Kissinger, you know, before he died, obviously. They recently collabed on a book that's all about outsourcing government decision-making processes to AI, right? And so, to me, the fear is not so much about AI becoming sentient and then killing us and doing this on its own. But it's about people like Kissinger, like Schmidt, right, like the national security apparatus, using AI to do what they were already trying to do before, right, but just with more tools and more power, right? And so I think when we talk about outsourcing government functions to AI, which, again, is exactly what Kissinger and Schmidt wanted, and this is not unique to them, right? I just think their book is really funny. But this is something that the highest calibers of the U.S. government are discussing, right? And when we think about that happening, I don't think we need to separate it like, oh, the robots are taking over. I think it's more like, oh, these powerful forces who, you know, already suck are just going to suck a little harder, you know, and have way more transformative technologies.
Yeah, I think they're going to be more confident that they can see through the fog of war because they have this fancy system that's mapping out the terrain. They can, you know, identify enemies. And it's like the classic problem of just like any 14-year-old boy is an enemy. Any military age male is an enemy. And I think we're going to see more of the same.
This is exactly what Peter Thiel's Palantir does. They're the biggest AI contractor, you know, not only for the military, but also for ICE, you know, Homeland Security, stuff like that. And, you know, they, I think in recent years, we've all been talking about AI a lot because in the commercial context, AI is pretty new and we're having like, you know, tools like ChatGPT get released to the, you know, general public. But in the military context, quote unquote, AI has been around and the US military has been at the forefront of that, right? And it's all just about mm-hmm. like gathering as much data as possible to predict behavior. And so Palantir has really, you know, is a good company to focus on in terms of AI, not only for like the foreign military stuff that the US is doing abroad, but also because they're helping US police departments do this, like, you know, in terms of like predictive policing and that kind of thing. And so again, it's like, did an AI fall out of the sky and do all of this? No, it's like, it's the same national security state that's just using AI to suck.
So the military is going to weaponize pictures of what if Steve Harvey was in a hardcore band with George Costanza? That's very
just
scary.
Think about the potential.
this is kind of alarming because it's kind of overlaps with something I was reading about today, which is that those Boston Dynamics robot dogs have been spotted in Gaza, and it's obvious, like, that's kind of okay, obviously that was going to happen. We all kind of knew that's where this thing was going, right? Sure. But it happened in spite of the fact that there was like a 6-company-wide, you know, agreement to not weaponize this technology. It was Boston Dynamics, Agility Robots, Anybiotics, ClearPath Robotics, Open Robotics, and Unitree all pledged that they will not weaponize or advanced mobility, general purpose robots or software, yada, yada, yada. And it just happened anyway, which I think shows you that, like, what you were saying earlier about, like, international law not really carrying any weight or whatever.
Against Israel or the U.S., but sometimes against, you know, African leaders. I'm not saying it does not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, oh yeah, right.
Yeah,
not against.
No, no, that was pretty much it. I mean, it's alarming that there's probably nothing keeping this stuff from going to its logical conclusion.
Well, that's like one of two counters I've heard to the sort of the 2001: A Space Odyssey thesis is that it's, you know, going to be used for just doing more bad stuff, but also that the real danger is not that it becomes sentient and kills people, but that it is put in charge of too much important stuff and mm-hmm. isn't actually as efficient and effective as we think it is right now. Is that a danger too?
Exactly. Yeah. And then it's like a Wizard of Oz situation, because then you can have people like Kissinger. I know he's dead, but you know what I mean? Like, hide behind, like, well, this is what the AI said was the best solution. Yeah. Right? And like,
the robot told me to bomb Cambodia.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you already have, like, in a smaller story, you already have United Healthcare using this quote unquote AI model to determine whether or not people like should receive care. And according to a lawsuit, that AI model, again, quote unquote AI, because it's obviously not actually intelligent, but this model that they're using has a 90% error rate. So it's
people. Being human is a pre-existing condition.
Goddamn robots.
Yeah. But it's, you know, United Healthcare, it's one of the biggest providers, right? It's actually the largest health insurance company in the US. And so if this lawsuit's correct, it's using this deeply flawed algorithm. And we can laugh about how it's silly and it's not AI, it's not actually intelligent, but these are, you know, real people also. And so it's scary in the fact that it is bad, you know, but just because it's bad, that doesn't mean that extremely powerful corporations and people aren't going to use it to do what they want to do anyway. Mm.
Well, one of those corporations, and it'll be interesting to see if they utilize AI or if they have been already, if they pursue it even more. Boeing's in the news, the airplane manufacturer, aerospace company. Kind of a cool title for an industry, aerospace. Mm. They, I wanted to cover this.
Because they do space too, don't forget, you know? They're doing a lot of
space. They've tried. Starliner. the they're like behind SpaceX and
and
but they also launching have, like, something that's safe for humans
and like you know every defense contractor is like has to do space exploration now, you know, that's the next frontier of warfare, isn't it?
You got to be in space. Did we want to talk about other news stories or you want to just go into Boeing?
What other ones did you want to discuss?
I don't know. Candace Owens.
She's like, we must discuss Candace Owens.
We don't have to. It's just, I thought we'd talk about it beforehand.
Well, okay.
Yeah, never mind. Never mind. Let's go. Naomi,
this isn't our podcast. We're a guest.
I know. Yeah.
We can talk about all of these things, you know?
True.
Yeah, we don't.
Are you saying that Boeing is the headliner of the podcast and that we should, do a little other bit?
Yeah, I was like, aren't there more appetizers?
Give it up for your feature act, Candace Owens.
Boeing has to get out of here early. They told me they have a hard out.
There's another show across town.
Yeah. Well, I hope they're not flying.
What happened with Candace Owens? Can you guys tell me? I'm not keeping up with her. I'm not keeping up with the Owens.
She got fired from, what was it, Daily Wire for being too sympathetic to Palestinians. But it appears she's not pivoting left. She's pivoting to more like Kanye West territory, anti-Semitism, you know. And
stuff. Oh, like she says the Jews?
I think there was some video where she, referred to the Jews or like Jewish people.
You can't put the in front of them.
Right. Did you have a hot take on that?
Enemy of my enemy, right? I mean, let them fight. Let Ben Shapiro and Candace Owens fight. Good. Great.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
But also,
yeah,
I mean,
we love to see it.
There's also like an optimistic view. I mean, and again, I haven't looked into this, but I know roughly who those people are and, you know, their influence. But I would say that like I think it's probably net good because, you know, for what it's worth, like it has been extremely taboo to criticize Israel. And again, I don't know what she said. If she said like, you know, gas the Jews, I take this back. We'll cut this out. But it has been really taboo. You know, for right wingers to criticize Israel. And I should hope that other right wingers see that. And, you know, it seems less taboo. I hope this is a sense of like the tide turning. And I think we should, I'm not going to like go watch her show now out of support, but I hope that, you know, these young right wingers, you know, move from watching the Daily Wire to watching her, I guess. Maybe it's marginally better.
I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I think it's all bad. There are examples more so in the UK of like conservative party officials and stuff who are, you know, because their conservative party is basically our Democratic Party. And unfortunately now their Labour Party is kind of the same thing too. But there have been Tories who are some of them who are like now out of office who are saying, you know, what Israel's doing is really horrible. And on everything else, they're like milquetoast, capital L liberals, or lowercase L liberals. But in the United States, it seems, I don't think it's a good pivot necessarily, because you have people like Alex Jones who are now criticizing Israel, and that's fine, but I don't think it's leading to like the same as she was on everything else, but now she's pro-Palestine. I think it's going to be like a more conspiracy minded sort of anti-Semitic
pivot. What is she saying?
Well, so like what precipitated the end? Because she's been on this for months now, since October. She's been against the war, saying it's not in the U.S.'s interest to, bankroll this war overseas.
Yeah, which, by the way, like classic.
Apparently,
like we're against war because it's like, you know, not in our interest, you know.
Yeah, it's an isolationist perspective, which is like
spending money.
The average American.
Also,
the
average American budget or whatever.
Yeah. Fiscally conservative. And then this month, apparently, she said there's secret Jewish gangs terrorizing Hollywood. and she which I don't know, can you dispute it? And she recently faved a tweet repeating a lie that Jews are drinking Christians' blood. I gotta see this tweet.
Good old dude. Blood libel. Yeah, see, classic. I think.
Yeah.
I think part of it is like with the Daily Wire, like there's only so much you can say if you're conservative. And it's amazing that they fill, you know, hours and hours of talk radio every day. But because it's just like the same thing. It's just government bad, government bad, government bad, family good. Like it's such a simplistic thing that it gets boring after a while. And even one of the founders of the Daily Wire is literally named Jeremy Boring.
Yeah.
That's how I feel whenever I watch any of it. Okay. So to mix it up, you need a spicy take in there. Like it's people are getting, have gotten, but that's kind of the rise of the alt-right in 2016 is because like modern conservatism is very boring. They don't have like an interesting view of the world. It's just very simplistic. And, you know, there's money in mixing that up, but because it's right wing, it doesn't go anywhere good.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the boring right wing that you're talking about used to be what the alt-right is now. They used to be very angry about stuff, and they were in reaction to, like, hippies and culture stuff. And there was an era where they were, you know, the silent majority, and then the hard hat riots would happen, and they'd go out and beat up hippies and stuff. But they've sort of just, like, fizzled in a way and settled, and then that created the necessity for the alt-right to make the project of the right wing attractive again, which it is attractive when it's
totally,
when it has an enemy and it's like, you know, mm-hmm, libidinal, and it's the thing that gets people riled up. And that really came about with this like idea of woke or whatever the mm-hmm fuck being the enemy of everything good, and there being a rallying cry for those people to fight some sort of invisible enemy mm-hmm all the time.
Yeah, because it's not interesting, powerful, or mobilizing to be like, we're in power and things are working for us.
And right, like, exactly.
What yeah we want to happen is happening. Like, no one's watching that.
Yeah, and it doesn't work if to, because the like reactionary kind of point of view always needs to feel like it's the underdog and it's being put upon by something. And only once we get in power, then everything will change. But that doesn't work when you're already in power and then mm-hmm everything still sucks. Shank Uger, who is running for president still, I think, he tweeted
even when there's no what election, he's still running for president.
He's been running for president.
I think a judge said he couldn't because he wasn't born in the United States.
He was
running like a single issue, well, not a single issue campaign, but he was running kind of partially as a statement about that amendment that it should be overturned.
I had until Jake just said that. I had no idea it was pronounced Shank.
It's Jank.
This is news to me.
No one knows.
It's a J.
I don't know how it's pronounced, so don't go off of what I'm saying. But I've heard people say Shank, which
it's Jank. It's
Jank. Jankum Uger, everyone.
That is because he's a Turk, right? They do have the J. Yeah.
Well, he tweeted that between Ben Shapiro and Candace Owens, Ben is right. If Owens just disagreed with him on Israel, I'd be on her side. But that's not all she does. She repeatedly said over the top anti-Semitic tropes, yada, yada, yada. So he's like tweeted this unnecessary congratulations to Ben Shapiro.
You weigh in a pro Ben Shapiro tweet. You could have said nothing.
Right. Yeah. That's like kind of my point here, because like she's probably on some anti-Semitic shit or whatever. There's no reason to boost the Daily Wire over this, though. And there is this alarming thing where there are a lot of like fascists right now who are against Israel and are specifically, if you stop and remove all context, they kind of agree with us about how there shouldn't be a fucking genocide happening in Gaza. But like, it's fucking stupid. I guess it's tempting to try to capitalize on that for support because they have so much like clout in American politics that the left doesn't. But mm-hmm it's a short-sighted project to ally yourself with libertarians and with fucking actual anti-Semites and stuff like that. The fucking KKK is, you know, against Israel. That's not a reason to like make common cause with them, you know, and it's happening with like Alex Jones and all these people. And it's just that Stone Toss guy I talked about in the bonus episode. He was against Israel for obvious fucking reasons. He's a Nazi, you know. The idea that like you can microscopically just cherry pick episodes, just incidents that you think that'll it'll somehow help the project, I think is kind of dumb, because in the long run, the politics of these people is really bad, and there's no way to get their support without taking on their entire project.
Yeah. And then the problem is when you're trying to form a coalition against Israel and its war crimes, and then somebody says something anti-Semitic, it just disqualifies everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually worse, because then it creates an opening for anyone against you to accuse you of anti-Semitism for being against the genocide.
Yeah. And most of the anti-Semitism out there is imagined.
They're going to, I mean, like the Israeli side is going to accuse the pro-Palestine movement of being anti-Semitic anyway. They do it even when there's no anti-Semitism. So it's also like that can't be what we're afraid of the most, you know? And to an extent, I would say because there is like such an active, like horrific genocide going on like right now, that really should be the most pressing issue. And so like if because of how fucked up our American political system is, if it does take some right wingers to pressure their Congress people because they watched some Candace Owens video, like I'm actually okay with that. Like people are dying. I'm okay with that. I don't think it's gonna, change, what they think about on other issues, these Candace Owens viewers. And again, I've not seen a single Candace Owens segment. If she said something really horrible, I'm sorry. But I'm just saying, like, if she's against Israel and she's getting random Republicans to start questioning Israel, I think that's fine. I really think it's fine. These people were going to be horrible people anyway. They might as well be horrible people that help end the genocide.
But I don't think we need to do like rallies and stuff with them. Like,
yeah, we don't need to invite.
Oh, shit. Candace Owens. There go my weekend plan. I mean, that's all I was thinking. Yeah, no, I mean, obviously we're not doing that.
All right. Well, is that all the news of the week? Did you have another? I just saw actually here in New York, the worst landlord in the city was arrested in owns properties in Manhattan. No, it's like a, it's a
they Daniel, arrested all of the C-suite.
Maybe it's a connection or something, but no, it's still like, it's like a small business tyrant, I guess. Daniel Oheb of Shalom he turned himself in this week. Damn. He has hundreds of repairs that he's been ordered to do by the court, and he's just refused to do them. And he's getting 60 days in Rikers. But right when he got in there, he got the shit kicked out. Yeah.
Surprise!
That may raise some questions too about coalitions and what people's motivations are, if they have to do with anti-Semitism or not. But that comes up a lot in New York, where I believe in demonizing landlords, but in this city anyway, that can get into murky territory too. So you have to be very clear about like the flyers you hand out or whatever, or not caricatures, make them look like Gentiles, I guess, all model for an anti-landlord poster or something in New York. But in most of the country, landlords are not Jewish, and most Jews in New York rent are not landlords. So
did he have like a trophy? Like worst landlord in New York?
I think there is. It may be the comptroller, the New York City comptroller. I believe it's the public advocate, I believe, keeps a registrar, a ranking of all the bad landlords in the city. And I guess he was at the top.
Do you remember when that guy was running for office years ago and he put out an ad that was like, I'm vote for me. I'm going to take the Jew landlords to court and get the Jew landlords or whatever.
Was that the rent is too damn high guy, or is that something else?
No.
He did turn out to be anti-Semitic, though. So, or at least the party is. I believe probably him too. But unfortunately.
That sucks.
God.
Yeah. Well, as we're saying,
party?
Find another segue here.
It's a party. I didn't realize.
Yeah, they tried to get it off the ground, and I think that's probably why it didn't take off, is because of the Jew hate.
Also, because it's the name of the party is an entire sentence, like it's an emo band or something.
Yeah, it won't even fit on the ballot
or a button.
Well, we mentioned earlier the Daily Wire, co-founded by a guy named Boring. You know what Boring sounds like?
This is a wonderful segue. Transition.
If you take out that R, swap it for an E, you have today's entree.
Wow.
Our headliner topic.
Oh, yeah.
Which is actually...
In with Naomi, is she okay with us moving to Boeing now?
Yeah, I'll allow it.
It's both the headliner and the entree. So we're doing like a dinner metaphor here as well.
I mean, stand-ups will do any show, especially in New York. If you're a comedian, you will do anything. And that includes getting eaten for like some, you know, the menu situation comedy show. People true. Like I know 50 comics who would do that. Maybe not their whole body. They'd probably be like, oh, just my leg. But I need the stage time. Boeing is a lot of things about it are boring, but it has been exciting as of late because a guy got suicided. This dude, John Barnett, whistleblower, and people haven't known what to do with this story because it's so wild. Mm. He was giving deposition and had 3 days to do it. And on the third day, he was just found dead in his car in the hotel parking lot. And there was like a note.
Everyone knows you kill yourself in the hotel room. Like, who does it in the parking lot?
I mean, I could understand how that would be tough on the maids, and maybe he wanted to be considerate to them. But but it's still extremely sus. His family says that the note doesn't seem like him.
Well, he did say, quote, if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. So,
oh, yeah. Which I would totally tell everyone if I was going to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fuck up.
We don't know exactly what the note said, but the family member said it doesn't sound like John. There's a good write-up on this in the American Prospect. I guess maybe one point in the favor of the suicide argument is that there was a silver handgun in his hand, and his brother was asked, did John have a gun like that? And he didn't want to answer. So maybe that's conceivable, but I highly doubt it. It would be too much of a coincidence that this guy killed himself and was about to give a major point in his deposition. And it would have been a very vindicating thing because this guy has been calling out Boeing for years. Mm-hmm. He was in the movie Downfall, which when I read that, I thought, why is he in the Hitler movie? Does he also speak German? I didn't know he was an actor. That's strange,
actor
but no, there
slash
is
engineer.
Yeah.
Don't tell your parents about this guy.
Double threat. It can be done. but Downfall is actually a movie on Netflix, a documentary on Netflix about Boeing, and it was made fairly recently, and he's in it. He's all over it. He's talking in his Southern drawl. His name was Mitch, nicknamed Swampy.
Whoa.
Two of his nicknames. Yeah, he's from Louisiana and was, according to this article, Maureen Tkacek, was a funkle. He was known as a fun uncle, really good guy. And he's been saying for years that Boeing is fucked up, that they have quality insurance inspectors who are being undermined by the company. And he would get like penalized for pointing out errors and problems with the planes that we're putting out.
Yeah. And well, he would get penalized because he would write it down.
Yes.
So his superiors were like, just don't write it down. You could tell us about it, but just we want plausible deniability.
Right. To him, the point of being a quality assurance guy is to add value. He said value added. That's the point. And instead they're like, this is overhead. This is waste that you're, you know, slowing this process down. He wound up getting diagnosed with PTSD
because of the shit he was going through with Boeing, just the harassment and stuff like that. And, you know, small chance that that drove him to suicide. But again, just a very strange time for him to do that. There was no indication to anyone around him that he was suicidal. And not insignificant, the law firm representing Boeing also negotiated the Epstein plea deal in the aughts.
Yikes. That
infamous, you know, sketchy plea deal. There are other whistleblowers, because Boeing has a lot of problems. So there are other people talking about this and telling press. So in theory, like, why, you know, it would be hard to assassinate all of them, right? That wouldn't be, but that would work.
Maybe they're thinking about it.
But maybe they're thinking about it. And also maybe
the message.
Maybe that, right.
Send
right,
message that's a, to the other whistleblowers. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, like, maybe there was something, there was a, an even bigger bombshell that would actually lead to, I don't know, Boeing being fully canceled. And that's what they wanted to get ahead of or something like that. And it's also possible, as Naomi mentioned, that it wasn't like the company itself, but like some employee or higher up who, you know, didn't have like the blessing of the CEO of Boeing, but still like wanted to cover his or her ass.
Yeah.
But this is like a longstanding thing, the longstanding story. And it's kind of taken this to get my attention more or less. Yep. But for years, Boeing has been plagued with problems. A lot of it goes back to, I mean, there are a lot of different places to start. Some people would point to the merger in 1996, where they became more, I don't know, obsessed with the bottom line and less concerned about the quality of the aircraft that they were putting out. But
it really started going downhill in 1881 when William and Boeing were right born.
I looked up, why is it called Boeing? And that was actually the name of a guy.
No, I'm not that. That was a joke rooted in truth. William E. Boeing was born in 1881.
Oh, damn. Okay. Wow. Yeah. The delivery.
William Entertainment Boeing.
Yeah. Sorry. One last detail about Swampy, who may or may not have been suicided.
Avenge Swampy.
Yeah. Apparently, Boeing's lawyers protested that he knew the documents too well. And he was quoting the documents. And yeah, and his own lawyers, John Barnett's own lawyers, were like, this is the best witness we've ever had in history.
Yeah. So, and Barrett wasn't the kind of guy they could character assassinate, you know? And so they had to really assassinate him. Maybe.
Can't character assassinate a Funkel.
I mean, it's right, funny just because everyone's been joking that this guy's been murdered, right? Because it's like, it just doesn't seem kosher. So for a few days, we've seen a lot of speculation. But hopefully there's also a serious and impartial investigation. You know, I hope it's not just these jokes and speculation and then there's no actual investigation into what happened. Because what kind of message is that sending to his killer, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
This all, I feel like maybe we should mention this in case anyone's not familiar. This is all coming off of like the end of a thing where, didn't the door come off of a fucking Boeing 737 recently?
January. So yeah, in January, a door fell from the sky at near the Portland airport and, in Alaska Airlines. What?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
What was amazing to me about that is it sucked a kid's shirt off, the air pressure.
Oh, it was Epstein's plane.
You know, earlier I was thinking about how to phrase that, and I don't know how it, the pressure removed an article of clothing, and it went out the...
Sucked a kid's shirt off is great.
But what was amazing to me is that I always was taught that if there's any sort of like breach, then everybody dies immediately if you're in an airplane. But I guess maybe
it
was a certain.
You could be in a plane with a missing door and not just get sucked out. Like, I didn't know the plane would fly with a hole in that. I straight up thought like you'd all get sucked out of the plane. And like,
well,
I know
they
like,
were at low as
hell, but not the entire, you know, seats and people, which is what I expected.
Nope, just a child's shirt.
They were at low altitude, so if they were at higher altitude, the pressure would be a problem, and perhaps more things would have flown out the door. Apparently, somebody retrieved their iPhone totally intact.
What? From the ground?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Good PR for Apple.
Jeez. It must,
yeah. Must, I mean, yeah. The battery is dead, but it's still intact.
Use a case, folks.
Or must have been made in the EU.
Really, it was fine.
Did they have a case, though?
Yeah, that's the big question. It's like one of those rugged cases that looks like a Cybertruck.
I mean, that's great. That's great free advertising for the case company. I feel like if it had a case, we would know, and that company would be like, look at this fucking thing. It saved the...
But yeah, I mean, Naomi talked about the Alaska incident in January, but... You know, this all really started, I would say, in 2018 when the Lion Air flight crashed just like minutes after takeoff. And after that happened, like you kind of saw Boeing and the FAA like do a little racism, a little scapegoating, right? Like, oh, it's Indonesia's fault. It's the pilot's fault. Oh, the pilot wasn't trained properly. You know, an American pilot would never do this. But it turns out it wasn't the pilot. Like it was a flaw in the Boeing plane, which was the MCAS system.
And then 5 months later, there was a similar crash.
Yeah. You want to explain MCAS? I feel like you would be able to do that really well, Anders.
Me?
Let's hear Anders explain MCAS just for entertainment's sake.
I feel like it's, you know, you love trains, you love planes. Let's hear it.
Yeah, Naomi has been looking forward to this. I have a part of why I have my position on autism being meaningless is because I don't know anything about science and am an idiot.
No, don't preface this. Go into it.
But I did take notes on MCAS. Last night I was like pacing back and forth, smoking cigarettes, just with the letters MCAS on the wall. Maneuvering characteristics augmentation system was introduced in the early 2010s because, you know, this is when – so American Airlines has a contract with Airbus in that they totally puts Boeing to shame. They are humiliated that they got outdone by Airbus.
Airbus.
And so they're like, we got to come up with a 737 really quickly. And it's supposed to take like 10 years to – build a plane like that properly to update it. And they did it in just a few years. They minimized changes as much as possible. And they even like tried to get out of training pilots on the new stuff. They said like, there are very few updates. And there was a significant update that they kind of hid from view of regulators and their own employees, which was MCAS. So basically, one of the changes to the new 737 is that the engines are like fatter, right?
The A320, the Airbus, had a more fuel efficient engine.
Right.
Because they were updating their shit. And Boeing was risk averse and didn't want to make a new plane. So they tried to put new engines on a plane that was developed in 1967. So they didn't update. They didn't give anybody a new plane for that long.
Yeah. But they have these pig ass engines and that messes with the tilt, the balance of the aircraft when it is mid flight. And so they have to compensate for that imbalance. And along comes MCAS, which is a stabilizer and is a new function where basically, if the nose is going down, right? And I learned this too. The nose of the plane is actually on the back. You know,
what?
Your nose. Yeah, you assume it's like, you know, Pixar's planes, and they got a cute little button nose up top by the eyes and the windows.
Draw faces on the plane in World War II where it looked angry and its nose was the nose cone.
No. Okay, so this is hilarious. It's definitely the nose is the front of the
plane. It is?
Yes.
Because what I was watching made it look like it was the nose was the back.
No.
That's where the that's what the MCAS triggers. like, okay, so you're talking, the MCAS is basically designed to automatically push the nose, which is the front, back down when the angle of the plane is too high, right?
Yes.
But
right.
But the system, the angle of attack, like detector system, was broken in the Lion Air flight and also in the Ethiopian Airlines flight in 2009.
Right, right. But we should explain what angle of attack is. So this I think I do know is that if the nose goes up too high, then this sensor, and there's like, it made this point in the documentary I watched, there's like millions of parts in an airplane, and the AOA, the angle of attack sensor, is just one of them, and it tells the pilot if the nose is going up too high, but instead it was communicating with the MCAS system, and it would the MCAS would then move it back down. But if it was inaccurate, if AOA was inaccurate, as it was, then it would just keep moving down even when it didn't need to, and to the point where they crashed. But they were, as you guys said, they were blaming the pilots on this. But when they looked over the black box, it turned out that the Lion Air dude, he knew this. He had, you know, he was either a smart guy, or they did like kind of mention this slyly in the training, that sometimes you got to override the MCAS and just shut it off. And that's what he did, but it was just dropping at such a high speed that it was physically impossible for him to pull back up, and everybody died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that actually was a great explanation besides getting the nose of the aircraft incorrect.
Thank you. There was like a diagram and it was mentioning a nose, but I was looking at the tail. Is the back, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, the tail is on the front, Anders, and the nose is on the back.
Yeah, yeah. the other thing that I think is important to mention is that, like, since Boeing was trying to push this aircraft out really quick, they only put one sensor that was tied to the MCAS system, whereas, like, you need a bunch of backup sensors. Because at any point, a sparrow could down a plane, as it has done to an F-35. But so if your sensor craps out, which in these two crashes, the sensors were fucked.
Right. You don't ever want a single point of failure, right? For something as critical as a system that could make the plane nosedive, right? Because if that sensor is faulty, which it was, it's going to trigger the MCAS system and it's going to take over the plane from the pilots. It's really like it's an automated process where, like, you know, in the case of Lion Air in Ethiopia, the pilots did what they had to do, but the system was so powerful and so stupidly designed that it's a case of the technology overriding what the pilot wanted to do. And that's what caused these deaths ultimately.
Right. And worth mentioning, if on the conspiracy angle, on that Lion Air flight was the grandniece of one Ralph Nader, who in the past has been subject of industrial sort of intrigue and sabotage from General Motors. They fucked with him bad in the 60s. I have a theory that they made him so paranoid that he pledged to never have sex, because they would like send sex workers to the grocery store and to hit on him. And to like catch him in a compromising position, and he would say no thank you. And I think after that he's like, I'm never gonna do it.
So Whoa. That was his only descendant?
No, well, he had siblings, one of which was like slightly more normal and had a daughter who then had this this young woman, Samia Stumo, who unfortunately passed away. It's very sad. She was a great niece in all senses. She was also a wonderful person who was in Ethiopia traveling to Kenya to fight disease.
Mm.
But yeah, what's happening now with like they have that problem with the Boeing MAX, the 737s, mm-hmm. but the door coming off, that was a different plane, right? If I'm not mistaken.
So the Lion Air flight in 2018 and the Ethiopian flight in 2019 were both the 737 MAX 8. And Alaska is the 737 MAX 9. So it's like a new iteration of the same plane. But in this case, like we already mentioned, it wasn't about the MCAS system. It was that the fact that a panel of the plane called the door plug blew the fuck off.
Right.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because the standard, according to John Barnett, was supposed to be redundancy. You want redundant procedure when you're building an aircraft.
But we got to keep like, costs down for Wall Street, you know?
Right. So this door managed to get through what's supposed to be several levels of checks, but they didn't make sure that there was a fucking door plug in the plane.
Right. According to the preliminary investigation by the, what is this acronym? National Transportation FAA. Safety Board. No, not FAA. The NTSB. The jet left Boeing's factory without the four bolts needed to keep the door plug in place. So,
yeah.
Jesus.
You got to pay extra for a door.
Oh, you want four extra bolts? Yeah. And it's crazy because apparently, like, when the door blew out, the bang was loud enough to, like, you know, actually damage. I mean, you know, thank God, you know, the pilot made an emergency landing safely, only a few injuries. But the bang was so loud that people, even with, you know, Beats and AirPods on, like, all have like ear damage now, according to the lawsuit. So,
oh man,
it must be such a traumatic memory. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. God.
Wow.
And there was another flight too that was going from San Francisco to Boston, where somebody noticed that the wing was literally coming apart and they notified the pilot.
Good.
They landed it.
Oh, really? A passenger?
Alerted? Yeah.
Oh, man. So I guess...
That's now the redundancy is like we have passengers tell them to look out the window. They're now part of the safety process.
That guy gets killed, too, the day after Josh Burnett.
Was he a Funkle?
I actually just booked two flights yesterday. I'm like going to Dallas and New York next month. And I was like, should I have a will? Like, let me like quickly have a will. Real
quick. I don't think so. I feel like it's for the amount of flying that goes on, there's just so few of these accidents that are happening. I think everybody's like making that joke. Like, should I ride the Boeing? I think it's, you know, it's very unlikely, but the tragedy is
knock on wood
that,
right now. Knock on it.
Yeah, I'm going to knock on wood. I mean, on my way to LA, I, you know, explode in a million pieces. But I think the tragedy here is that in 2018 and 2019, these things could have been avoided so easily. Like, you don't. Like, nobody wants to die of some, like, fucking manufacturing, cost-cutting measure. So, like, the CEO could have more pools, you know? Like, that's why this plane does an automatic nosedive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, this happens across the board, like, you know, with deregulation in this country, of course. But it's like it's egregious here because like literally lives are at stake and you know you're building planes. But of course, you know, this is what happens, you know, in many federal agencies. But with the FAA, it's almost like the term regulatory capture is like almost not even enough to describe what happened because the FAA actually delegated a lot of oversight to these corporations themselves as far back as 2004. So like we had Boeing like in charge of the duties like inspections and like vetting these engineering designs like with FAA supervision. Sure. But it's still the company itself being in charge of like, you know, regulating itself. It's just like not very kosher, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is a key point and example of like the profit motive in general and how people will conservatives but also like progressives sort of like anti-monopoly types will say like competition is what breeds innovation and competition is a good thing and that's the problem with crony capitalism is there's no competition but competition led to this. They were like let's do something fast and ultimately they do have an interest in regulating themselves to the point where most of their passengers aren't dying, right? That's pretty standard, but they don't have that extra incentive to make sure that none of their passengers die. So, because at the end of the day, it's you know, two flights. It's that where that crashed, and there's a couple more flights where they had uh-ohs, right? And that's chump change. So they're just going to, you know, that's a problem with the profit motive in general. Because like at every point, there were signs that they could have done something. The maiden flight of the Max in 2016, they saw it was janky. They saw there's a lot of problems with this. Then, so let's just give the MCAS system more control over the flight. They're trying to rush this as much as possible, knowing that most people probably aren't going to die, but a couple will. They can live with that as long as the bottom line is looking good.
It was shanky. This is also the failure. the failure of the MCAS system also is like an eerie parallel to the AI stuff we were talking about earlier, where if we plug in these AI systems,
a mind of its own, like and then didn't train the pilots about MCAS, didn't even tell them about MCAS, like they withheld information from the pilots. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And just in the future, relying on plugging in an AI thing to regulate shit like that for the profit motive cuts out,
you know,
workers and stuff.
Yeah,
it's probably going to lead to stuff like this happening.
Yeah, the FAA, I think the other thing run by AI.
You're doing a great job. Keep it up. I think the other thing to mention here is also the creation of value in the stock market, because like why isn't Airbus, the European manufacturer, facing the same kind of problems with like the planes falling apart in the sky because of cost cutting measures? It's because like Boeing as a company is like focused on stock buybacks and like keeping the value of its stock inflated rather than its the product.
I mean, it's like go ahead, sorry.
I was just gonna say use value versus exchange value, you know. Use value has a value. Exchange value doesn't benefit humanity.
Exactly. Totally. Can't beat that. I'm not even gonna say my point now. I'm not gonna quote the Communist Manifesto, you know. Can't top that.
Let me ask you guys, do you guys think that it is likely that Boeing will pursue more AI technology and cut more corners using AI, or companies like Boeing, or is like they're in the hot seat too much at this point to do that?
I mean, I agree that they're in the hot seat in like a news cycle sort of way, but unfortunately, I think the relationship between the federal government and Boeing is so cozy. And especially, you know, if you think about like Boeing's relationship with the U.S. government in terms of like being the fourth largest defense contractor on Earth, and, you know, their very close relationship with the FAA as well. Like, I don't see a ton of real, you know, hot seat, yes, in the news. And, you know, there's going to be some slaps on the wrist. But I mean, last time this happened, you know, it's funny you guys brought up like the Epstein sweetheart deal. Like Boeing also kind of got a sweetheart deal after those two major crashes in 2018 and 2019. You know, the DOJ like brought criminal charges and it was like, okay, you defrauded the FAA, blah, blah, blah. But what really happened, guys? We didn't see any real reform. There was just a settlement. It was announced, you know, the day after January 6th. So this was also kind of like buried in the January 6th Capitol riot news. But the DOJ just like kind of closed the investigation to Boeing and slapped them with a $244 million fine, which is obviously a lot of money for you and me, but it's really, really nothing to Boeing. And basically just like gave them what amounted to like this 3-year probation. And so obviously the families of the victims were super upset about that. But also I think we should all be upset about that, because like what real consequences does this company face? It's not much.
Right.
Yeah. I think, you have to think about how,
like we said, like what is United going to go buy another plane? Like they can't.
They can buy the Airbus, but so they're it's a duopoly kind of, but yeah, you can think about the how Trump said in 2017, like, God bless you, may God bless the United States of America, and God bless Boeing when he visited a manufacturing plant. And Obama said, I am like the number two salesman at Boeing, and I expect a gold watch from them after selling so many planes. So it's like they're so tied to the US and the government. It's like hard to see any real consequences.
Yeah, I mean, in
also,
Go ahead. This digital program where we're talking virtually results in a lot of accidental everyone starting this sentence at the same time. Go ahead. Sorry.
Let's blame the software. This is the MCAS podcast.
All of us talking. It has to be the delay. Like, you know. Go ahead.
That might be. Yeah. Well, also worth mentioning that Trump was, I think, the only president in history to ground an aircraft. I believe he said, like, after the crash in 2019, it was like all of these planes need to be grounded immediately.
But
it's also
China did it first, and other countries followed, and the U.S. did it last.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The U.S. was the last place.
Yeah. And another side of this too is that Boeing used to do most of their work in Washington State, and then after the merger, they moved a lot of their manufacturing down to the South, South Carolina specifically, which is non-union. And I don't think it's a coincidence that you had a lot of these cost-cutting. It is a tough word. A lot of these cost-cutting measures put in place in these non-union shops where, you know, you can get away with that more. And that was one of the objections that John Barnett raised, is that a lot of these people are not mechanics. You just hired them from flipping burgers, as he said, and they haven't been trained. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe there weren't enough mechanics in Charleston to even do this. But they at every point were just thinking about the bottom line. And it is noteworthy today, though, that Tennessee has a union election being filed at the Volkswagen plant, which they tried to do a few years ago and it didn't work. But now UAW is under new leadership, and perhaps this will start to change that tide. I think that's really, at the end of the day, the only way we're going to be able to fight back against this is to have the workers who have a vested interest in producing safe aircraft, because it means that they're under less stress and pressure from their managers. I think if this changes, I think it's probably going to come through them.
Well, one thing I've learned today is if you are whistleblowing, don't work at Boeing, folks. Yeah. That guy got assassinated.
What about Boeing pains? Like, gross.
Yeah, I've been thinking of a lot of Boeing jokes throughout this episode.
I'm sorry.
Boeing bong. You know?
Yeah. That's something Trump is going to say. Boeing.
Boing, boing, boing.
I guess let's do a little hypothesizing here at the end. What do we think Mr. Barnett knew? Was there anything he was going to spill on that third deposition day, or what do we think really happened there?
It's tough because I can see the argument that he's not going to say anything he hasn't already said before, you know, because he has been talking about this stuff for a while. He's been talking to the press for years, and he did already give a formal deposition, right? Which in theory is like when it all comes out. But then again, maybe he came into new information. Like, maybe he had a source. Maybe there was a coworker that talked to him. Like, it's just, yeah. If I'm going to speculate, I think what he was going to reveal is that Boeing did 9/11. on purpose?
Yeah. I mean, they did, technically. It was a Boeing plane. It was Boeing planes, yes.
Oh, and they didn't have locks on the cockpit doors, which, full circle, is something I remember hearing that Ralph Nader suggested at one point. But
yeah.
The MCAS system should have moved the nose of the plane away from the the
MCAS would have prevented 9/11.
Yeah. Why doesn't MCAS know to do that? Hmm.
Yeah.
Sus.
That's I yeah, like that theory.
Prediction. What are your guys' predictions? What was he gonna reveal?
I like the 9/11 one. I think that has a lot of heat to it, and we should pretend to know more and release a bonus episode. But yeah, I think it was probably like a warning to other whistleblowers, and I think he was probably just gonna summarize what. But who knows? Maybe he had something big. Maybe he had. Evidence of direct knowledge, because I believe he was talking to other people,
right?
Who may have known other things, like they were leaking to him,
right?
And maybe he had information that the CEO knew. That this was going to be a problem, and there was even a memo that was well, 0.5% of our passengers could die, and he was that's fine.
If they did kill him, it must have been information that was so damning that they prefer the negative story about them possibly murdering this guy to what he actually said.
Right, yeah.
It doesn't look good right now. So it must have been not great.
Yeah.
I think what Funkle Swampy was going to tell us. That's technically his name. Isn't that crazy? Okay. The weirdest name.
Funkle Swampy.
The craziest ass name of all time, Funkle Swampy.
Sorry for my ignorance. I thought his name was John Barrett.
John Barnett. His nickname, he had a couple nicknames. One was Mitch and the other was Swampy.
Okay.
Which is short for Swamp Dog.
Okay, yeah. I'm sick.
That's short.
He's from Louisiana. So.
Yeah, totally. It was a geographical nickname.
I'm very confused that your name can be John and then your nickname is Mitch. Right. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that
does. Is that a Louisiana
name? I feel like when you're an airplane engineer, it's just all fun and games around the warehouse. You're just making up nicknames all day long.
I bet. Well, what I was going to say is that I think that the secret he was going to release was something really anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
Could end Candace Owens forever.
Or maybe he had a secret that you guys actually do control everything.
Ooh.
There's tunnels in the plane.
Just shit. Oh, just kidding. But we should also state that he had a really tough day before. They were making him go through everything in minute detail, and it was just really exhausting. And he did have PTSD, so it's not impossible that he did actually kill himself. I just think it's pretty unlikely.
I think that's actually a good point, because even if they didn't pull the trigger, but they drove him to the point of killing himself, that's also shitty.
They
ruined this guy's life regardless. He was exposed.
That is worth mentioning. Yeah, he was financially ruined. He was harassed by former coworkers.
And we don't even know what's happening. We don't know what kind of harassment he was getting, behind closed doors even. And you could have agents of Boeing threatening him and maybe even influencing him to kill himself. That's not totally out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, that maybe they had dirt on him and they were going to release it unless he dropped out of the trial or something like that before that day, and he just couldn't take it. Yeah. That's possible too.
Just to bring it back, tarnished.
I said this already, but I think it's worth repeating. He did say, "quote If anything happens to me, it's not suicide."
Yeah, that's pretty loud and clear.
Who did he say that to?
A family friend, I believe. who was quoted by the press. So, okay, it's I guess damn. Hearsay. It's according to someone that knew him, but I don't. Whatever. He didn't say it to me.
I don't know.
Okay, I don't know. I just it's been reported, you know, and apparently they were very close. But yeah, it's just sad either way, though. Even if they didn't pull the trigger, it's still fucked up.
Yeah. All right. Well, a nice warm place to end it, I suppose.
Yeah, really cheery, really heartwarming.
Dinner has been served.
Now for dessert?
Yeah, for dessert, how about some plugs? And make sure these are fully screwed in.
Oh, God.
Four door plug.
where can people find?
We are the Cargo Cult podcast. You can find us on all podcast platforms.
Including YouTube.
Including YouTube, even though don't go to YouTube because we are not really posting there regularly. So take that back. But yeah, I love hanging out with you guys. I know Naomi and Anders, you guys hang out all the time, but I do enjoy coming on this podcast together.
Yeah, thanks this was fun.
This is a good time. A good
thanks for doing it.
Swampy time.
Check out our Patreon. We got some great episodes back there. And my other podcast, The Vanquished, is nearing its third episode. We're going to have one out about John McCain this week. So check that out on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. And if you are in New York City, come out to the next paid protest, April 5th, which is going to be a special paid protest, roast of Eric Adams. We got some great comics who are going to make fun of our crazy mayor, and the money's going to all go to the citywide budget campaign. Mm. And then last but not least, I just wanted to say we lost a friend of Naomi and mine today, Jay Agbon, a great comic from DC, also was in New York, and unfortunately he passed away. So just wanted to give condolences to friends and family.
Go check out his special, Responsible Child. Check out a special and where he will live forever.
Wow. This is a really great time for me to do my plugs right after that.
should have headlined with that plug. I'm sorry.
He should have been the entree, the main course. I'm just fucking around, guys. I'm going to do my plugs anyway, though. Hello. Listen to my other podcast, Why You Mad? It's a podcast I do with my friend Luisa Diaz, who's an anthropologist and a comedy booker, and it's about philosophy and comedy and stuff. And then my other podcast, that's my podcast, I Don't Know You, me and my friend Avery Moore, watch King of the Hill, and that's fucking it. I have a show here in LA at the Good Night on 420. It's the show is called Avatar 2 Up in Smoke. I am going to either be doing a joke as Cheech or Chong. I haven't decided yet. And I'll also be doing stand up. That's all I got. Oh, and again, sign up for our Patreon if you enjoy our podcast. I feel like I should plug that more because that's how we make money around here.
Sign up for their Patreon, you guys. Get off your... How much is it? How many bucks a month?
It's only 5 smackaroos.
It's only 5 bucks. You guys aren't signing up for the Patreon. What's wrong with you? Sign up.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Sign up. You're just content with getting free episodes, you fucking freeloader. Sign up for the fucking Patreon, please.
Don't be like Boeing. Don't cut corners.
Yeah. Come on.
I'm blowing the whistle on you not paying us for our podcast. Toot, toot.
If you don't sign up, the show is going to fucking nosedive, you guys. You need to support it.
That's true.
There's nothing to save it.
There's no MCAS on this podcast.
Yeah, because Anders does not know his nose from his ass. So,
I'm actually starting a new podcast called MCAST, where we just go over the contours of the MCAS system.
Yeah, and it's wrong.
Patreon is going to be $1 million a month because that's how much it costs to train somebody on one of these planes.
All right, let's get the hell out of here.
Let's get that. All right.
It's finished.
Thanks for having us.